history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you no matter where you live in this amazing country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around you. And this program is all about finding them and taking the time to listen to their experiences. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we are educated, we're entertained, and frequently we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Every once in a while, we end up in a situation where we just can't fit a veteran story into one episode. And that's where we find ourselves today, getting into part two of my conversation with the one and only Jimmy Weldon. If you missed the first part, you can listen to the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. But for now, here's how he reminded us of where so many of us know his voice, or at least one of his voices, from.
There's a little duck named Yankee Doodle, and his best friend is Chopper, a great big bulldog. Fibber Fox, or someone I'm talking about now in the Yogi Bear show, someone chases him down the road, and he calls to Chopper. Chopper tells him to run. He gets there, and when he does arrive, Chopper says, "Well, now you're safe, Yaki. Where is your mama?" And he always looked up sadly and said, "I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama? Only you'll remember it this way."
"Help! Chopper! Chopper, you're after me!"
"Run, little feller!"
"I'm running."
"Yaki, now that you're safe, tell me, where is your mama?"
"I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama?"
Yep, 53 years after he first did that voice for Hanna-Barbera, he can still pull it off at age 92. In a few cities around California, as well as the Dallas, Texas area, some baby boomers remember appearing on his live local TV shows featuring Webster Webfoot. He told us how he first tried talking like a duck at age 12. He had caught the acting bug as a 7-year-old. We heard how he ended up in a combat engineer unit during World War II. His original unit was on Omaha Beach on D-Day, but he had been transferred out for pilot training, only to be pulled back into the engineers after the Battle of the Bulge. We heard about what he witnessed at Buchenwald concentration camp, and how he met his wife Muriel when he stayed behind in England after the war and attended the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. We even learned how somebody born Ivy Laverne Shin arrived at the stage name of Jimmy Weldon. And now we'll pick it up with his return stateside after World War II.
Had you been doing the duck voice all along?
Yeah, but just as a fun thing, when I went in radio back in Chickasha, 250-watt station, first job, I asked the manager, I said, "Could I do a program with the little duck voice I do?" Couldn't call him Donald Duck. I had to name him something. So anyway, in my book, I tell how I changed the name, because I'd use little Webster. Like, I'd take the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here at the mic, and I'd say, "Oh, there's a little fella over at the door. Hey, who are you?"
"I'm a duck."
Well, come over here."
"Right here."
And he'd come over to the microphone, and people would call in and say, "Who's this guy?" Because they thought it was two different people.
Yeah.
And so that's where we developed Little Webster's voice, and he loved Spike Jones and all that. And that's where kept on going. And finally, when television came along, they said, "You're going to have to get a duck." I said, "What do you mean, ventriloquist?" I said, "I move my mouth more talking like a duck than I do myself." And, "Well, you got to learn." And so that's when I developed the thing of having little Webster, and I look at Webster. Most ventriloquists look out in the audience like, "How good they can do without moving their mouth." I had to look at him because I moved my mouth more talking to him than I did myself. But people used to tell me, they say, "How do you make his eyes move?" He didn't move anything. It was just the expression that we did for each other. You know?
Yeah, it made it seem like he did.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you, and maybe I'm way off on this, but you know, it seems that a lot of the great ideas and the true inspiration and the creativity that we take for granted so often, that a lot of times when it's first expressed or first originated, it's not quite as popular. Or there's naysayers, and there's people that say, "That's a horrible idea. You ought to quit doing that." Did you ever have somebody tell you that was bad?
Did I? The director of my first director, Dawes Butler, Everybody said, well, Mr. Campbell was the one. He liked me. He heard me on radio. Mm-hmm. And when I got the duck, he's the one told me, you got to get a duck. Because we bought a television station. I said, okay. So I got this, and then I came back and started, had Webster with me, and we were on doing an audition out there at WFAA TV.
In Dallas.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The director, my Ash Dawes, my director, and three other guys, this is the dumbest thing. He won't last a week on the air. Mr. Campbell said, make his show good. And if it hadn't been for Mr. Campbell having faith in me, I would never done anything here. Wait, and later on, they said, well, he saw something in you we didn't. Mm-hmm. But then, and I gave my life story to a group of doctors. When he called me one day, and he said, Jimmy, he said, this is Dr. Abrams. Would you come down and give your life story to 150 doctors and their wives? I said, what? He told me, see, I was looking at the paper this morning. I saw, and he said, darling, I'm reading this paper article here about a man talking like a duck for a living. There's got to be a reason. I think he'd be interested to have to be one of our programs. So I go down there. I talk, and I take a little Webster out, and we do a little fun thing. I got through, and he said, well, then I'm not interested in you, but I'll buy any part of that duck. And that's where it all started, you know, on TV. So it was, I've been so fortunate, man, really.
Well, and I'm just thinking about the audiences that you speak to, and especially the young people. And you have the Center for Youth Patriotism, and you talk about America, but you also dare them to dream. And so often, yes, the things they dream about, there are going to be scoffers, there are going to be mockers, there are going to be people that say that's a horrible idea. What's your advice for people who really do believe in these things that they have, and they have some people that come up against them and say, no, you shouldn't do that?
No, that's what I say. I said, don't, if you have faith. I said, look, here's the greatest idea at all. I said, the guy pointed to the lights. I said, Thomas Alva Edison is the greatest thing in the world. I said, God gives us talents, but our creative imagination is far greater than any talent we have. Remember what I just said. Our talent is good, but the creative imagination we have is far greater. Thomas Alva Edison working on an incandescent light, and his assistant came in one day and said, Mr. Edison, I'm not really sure what you're working on, but you failed 967 times so far. And he said, no, I've just eliminated 967 ways that won't work. Mm-hmm. I said, God gave him that electric light in his mind before it ever appeared on a laboratory table. I said, don't stop. That's the key. So important. And so when you have a dream, just think about it. There'll never be another you. No way, shape, or form. Nobody can ever think like you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're unique in every way. The idea, though, that the key is so important, don't stop. Once you have your dream and you make a goal, don't stop. And that's what happened to me. I'd been on the air with Little Webster since 1950. Now I'm in Fresno, right where you are, and I heard a man speak on the word motivation. A desire held in expectation with the belief that it will be realized. Never heard that word before. When he started talking, I said, golly, I was listening to it. He said, there are millions of bodies in our cemeteries whose epitaph should read, died at 20, buried at 90, because they mistook their first goal as success and stopped. So when you reach your goal, you must keep reaching higher and higher. It's not a destination. It's a journey that never ends. When I heard him say this, he said, Hilton was a little boy, 7 years old, and he used to sit on the floor playing. He was a hotel operator. His parents laughed and smiled at him when he did that. And he'd talk about what he's going to do when he got big and had a hotel. Well, when he did, got old enough, he bought a flea bag in Cisco, Texas. He put into being all of those things he dreamed of as a little boy. Guy down the street owned a hotel came to him and said, Conrad, you've made a transition in this building. I can't understand it. Can you tell me what you did? He didn't say, heck no, get your own ideas. He said, I'll be glad to help you, because he loved the hotel business.
Mm-hmm.
6 months later, the guy down the street said, would you buy me out? He just didn't like the hotel business. Conrad Hilton didn't say, well, I'll be the biggest hotel operator in the world. He said, no, if I had two hotels, I could be of more service to these people in Cisco than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
See that? Thinking of somebody else. But that was the beginning of the Hilton hotel chain. Then he told me, he said, the thing about it, he said Napoleon Bonaparte used to sit on the floor pretending he was a general, playing with toy soldiers. Then he got us, he says, scientists take a bullfrog. They'll drop them down a Pyrex dish with an inch and a half of hot water. When his frog gets the bottom of that water, his legs are strong and the water is hot. And he comes right out of there. They catch him, empty the bowl, and put cold water in it. Another drop of frog in. He sits there to ribbit, and he'll never move. The water will finally boil until he dies. So that's complacency in our lives. Don't stop. That's why when you find people that are that my age, usually they don't, when they retire, they don't last long because this computer says they don't need me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not of any value. So I said, don't ever stop. That's the key.
And you followed your own advice.
Got two things going for us, Paul.
Yeah.
One of which we have no control whatsoever. That's time. One of my pet peeves, someone say, do it this way and save time. You can't save 1/1,000,000th of a second. Think about the time we've been on the air together now here. Mm-hmm. All these minutes are gone. You can't get them back. Can't save time. Spend your time wisely. The only thing we own lock, stock, and barrel is our attitude. Don't let anyone step on your attitude. I will hear not those who weep and complain, for their disease is contagious. Let them join the sheep. The slaughterhouse of failure is not my destiny. The prizes of life are at the end of each journey, not near the beginning, and it's not given to me to know how many steps are necessary in order to reach my goal. Failure I may still encounter at the 1,000th step, yet success hides behind the next bend in the road. Never will I know how close it lies unless I turn the corner. Always will I take another step. If that is of no avail, I will take another and yet another. In truth, one step at a time is not too difficult. I will try and try and try again. Each obstacle I consider is a mere detour to my goal and a challenge to my profession. I will persist and develop my skills as a mariner develops his by learning to ride out the wrath of each storm. So long as there's breath in me, that long will I persist. For now I know one of the greatest principles of success. If I persist long enough, I will win. I will persist. I will win. That's one of the scrolls in the Ogmandino's greatest salesman that ever lived. I memorized that and I've given it in churches many times in years. Yeah, 10 scrolls.
And I know you've got a fountain of motivational pieces like that. And I'm interested in your journey, because I'm sure as that 7-year-old kid, you never could have imagined all the twists and turns from going off to war, surviving that, meeting your wife, bringing her home. You both find careers in show business. But you started out, and you kind of went past this quickly. You start out at a brand new radio station that had never had a single announcer before. You're the very first announcer on this brand new radio station right after World War II in Oklahoma. You create this character, and he takes off, so you're on television in Texas, then in Hollywood, then in Fresno, and Salinas, and Bakersfield, and you're flying back and forth in your own plane to all these stations?
Yes.
I mean, who does that?
Well, I don't know. I've been the most fortunate guy God ever let live.
And you had talked about wanting to be a pilot, and your flight training gets cut short because they need bodies in Europe, and you go over as an engineer. Did you learn to fly right after you got back, or
yes.
How did you become a pilot?
Yeah, Moen, my brother, he was still in the Air Force. I mean, we're home. We buy a Super Cub together, and that's when I got my license, 1946. Kept on going, and I've been a pilot 68 and a half years, and instrument rated 55 and a half years. But, Paul, here's the key. You said it when you went by here.
Yeah.
Every time I do anything, if it's a commercial or any part in a film, that little boy comes to life again.
Mm.
When he says action, and you know what I mean, direction.
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest things, I felt so good at the Royal Academy. We had a thing called soliloquy where we'd do different things, talking about what was going on. We were assigned different characters, and when a cue was given, everybody would just stop while we walked around the room and did our soliloquy. And we had a critique after it was over, each one of us. One of the fellas said, I think Jimmy should have done it this way. Our director, I'll never forget, it's in my book. He said, there are three parts in acting. One is the writer, director, and star of his own productions like Ivor Novello and Noel Coward. The second is a director who can read and interpret the writings of what the writer meant and to give it direction. The least unimportant person on the screen or stage is the actor. Anyone who can take directions is a good craftsman in the field. And he said, Jimmy Weldon is one person here that can take directions.
Mm.
That made me feel so good, I couldn't stand it. And I see young people, we all have creativity. I told you about our creative mind. But when some young actors, directors, says, I want you to walk over to that wall, the light's coming through the window, then turn slowly and look at me and give me your line. And when this young person says, what's my motivation? Because I told you to. Now get over and do it. See, you follow me?
Yep,
in other
yep,
words,
yep.
If you can take directions.
And I bet you you got pretty good at that in the Army.
Yeah.
Did that help?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm connecting all the dots here.
Oh, Paul.
But
God
here's another thing. I could sit here for hours with you. I don't know if you'd be up for it, but I would. It's fascinating. You know, one thing that I believe that if there's anything that I've learned is that it's God's plans are always better than my plans. No matter how I line things up, his ideas are always better. And it strikes me that with your acting and voicing career, you've got this character, Webster Webfoot. You aren't pitching him to Hollywood and saying, hey, you need to put me on. They heard about you and they came to you and said, let's do this new Hanna-Barbera show. So
yes.
What was the first thing you heard about this idea of Yogi Bear, who's now, I mean, it's everywhere. Everybody knows Yogi Bear.
Can't believe it. Yeah, when Bill Hanna called me and said, told me who he was, said, we're going to start a new program called Yogi Bear, and he says, there's a little duck here named Yaki Doodle. We just want you to do the voice.
Mm-hmm.
I said, fine. But like I say, I had no idea what it would mean.
How did they find you?
They heard me doing, saw me doing Webster.
They saw you on television.
Right, yeah. Yep. So that's when they called me to come in.
And he's been Yaki Doodle ever since. Time for a break, but when we come back, we're going to hear Jimmy share how that duck helps him bridge the gap between the greatest generation and the latest generation and comes in quite handy in his motivational speaking. Check out the photos and video on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.
Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our continuing conversation with 92-year-old Jimmy Weldon of Burbank, California. Born in Texas, raised in Oklahoma, he served in Europe toward the end of World War II with the 1270th Engineer Combat Battalion. He continues to manage a heavy workload as a motivational speaker through a nonprofit called the Center for Youth Patriotism. If you'd like to book Jimmy to speak to your group, I have the contact info for you at hometownheroesradio.com. When we left off, he shared how his work in television with his talking duck sidekick, Webster Webfoot, led to a call from Bill Hanna of Hanna-Barbera, looking for somebody to voice a duck in what would become the Yogi Bear Show. That role of Yaki Doodle has been quite a life changer, hasn't it?
It's unbelievable what that little character has meant. Like I said, wherever I go, they always wondered what the guy looked like, did the voice of that little duck. Paul, wherever I go, it makes no difference. And he's still on the air today.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Hanna-Barbera program of Yogi Bear is on Cartoon-a-Rooney and Boomerang. And so I'm a member of Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters. These are all old entertainers. I mean old, sure enough. Network guys from one end. And they've come up to me. They said, Weldon, they know you better than they do us because you're still on the air. The little duck, you know, that. It's amazing how so many of the people that are members of Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters, I'm on the board of directors, been on it for long, and had so much fun because I always say, let Jimmy close. I always close the program with something. But a lot of these guys have given money to my little foundation more than ever. And I want to cry when I think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Center for Youth Patriotism, they've done this and meant so much. because it's for the children.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about that. Another aside, you mentioned the fact that Yogi Bear is still on. When you travel and you're giving a speech here or presentation there, do you ever flip the TV in the hotel to Cartoon Network to
no,
see Yogi Bear?
No, but let me give you one. It just knocks me out. I'm working now with at-risk students. These are young people who've been in trouble with the police. Mm-hmm. And their parents call them and say, would you put them in class? Now, these at-risk, can you imagine this, Paul, when I walk in there and these students are got their arms crossed, they're looking at me like, what the heck is this old guy going to try to do for us?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I said, let play a game with me now. I said, you know who I am and don't realize it, but you grew up with me. And it's like, crud. So then I say, close your eyes. You let your imagination work. I said, please, just for fun, don't look up. Keep your eyes closed. And I give the story of little Yakky Doodle. And I see from a frown to smile starts when I mention about Yakky Doodle, because it does. They know. Then I go, help, Chopper, and they open their eyes. And they put their heads back down. But now their arms are opening up. Follow me?
Yep.
And now when I finally get to that little part, it says, I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama? And I said, look up here. I said, you're looking at the duck. They don't see a 92-year-old guy here. I'm somebody that they realize that they grew up with and see me as that little duck.
Mm-hmm.
I always send a special email to everyone who gives money to my little foundation, because that's a promise. I said, I'll let you know what I give them, what the CDs they get and the DVDs and all that I give to the children.
Mm-hmm.
But I told one time, I said, I never dreamed one day that I would be able to touch the lives of young people by doing a voice that I did on television 53 years ago that they register now with me. It means, in other words, that is something tangible. I can see if they got an old guy that's going to come talk to you about the war and what America means. That's nothing. But when they hear that I'm Yakky Doodle and they say, golly, because I always say we're all children when we can get away with it. Only difference between an adult and a child is just the cost of the toy. And I'm always saying this too. Psychic income only appears in an income tax. No, it's in the heart. Recognition for an entertainer is the greatest income there is.
Hmm. You know, powerful words.
Yeah, instead of saying, oh, I know that old jerk. But if they say, oh, I remember him. And when someone comes up and says, Uncle Jimmy, when they say Uncle Jimmy, I want to cry because I know that they remember. They said, I was on your show 50 years ago. And I think, golly.
Because you did. When you were doing these local television shows, there were kids that would be participants in the show.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. That had to be fun for you.
Oh, yeah. Always enjoyed being with them. Yeah, and they wanted to talk to Webster, and they'd keep looking at Webster even though I was doing it. And they wanted to play a joke with Webster. If we could put something more on Webster, they love this.
A few more things come to mind, and I don't want to forget to come back around to the Center for Youth Patriotism and really explain what it does and why it exists and how people can help you. But both you and your wife had show business careers. You mentioned during the war, Mickey Rooney coming and you emceeing for him and all that. I bet you have a pretty good handle and can help put in perspective for us the way Hollywood stars participated in World War II and the respect that you might have for the entertainment industry at that time. Because, I mean, Jimmy Stewart's flying bomber planes.
Yes, yes.
You go all the way down the list. Are there some of those stories that stand out to you, maybe people you came across or become familiar with, that you look back and say, I really admire that Hollywood person?
Yes, that's right. You can read this in history books and all everything else. I'm now the chaplain emeritus for American Legion Post 43. This is down on Highland Avenue here in Hollywood. We've got a building, it's 80 years old, and we've got pictures of Clark Gable, Stewart, all of them down there because they were members of the American Legion. They were all in the war doing different things. Mickey Rooney just died not long ago, but he was one big, big member of our American Legion. It's a pride, sure enough, to think that I'm a part of something like that. It's almost like can't believe it. But like I'm saying, it's that I can see that little 7-year-old boy, me, saying someday I'm going to be in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to do a commercial or a film, it's just like it never quits.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said it's not a destination. It's a journey that never ends. We always want to do something a little bit more.
Well, you said it's not a destination, it's a journey. So I know there are still things in front of you that you're looking forward to. But when you think about this long career of entertaining people, of bringing a little light to their day, what are some of the highlights for you? When you think back on it, what are the things that stand out that you're most proud of or were the biggest thrills for you?
Well, you can't put it on paper. I still think it's that personal feeling of someone saying, I remember you. We did so-and-so. I saw you do this. I saw you do that. That you don't even realize. It's almost like someone, what's the old story about someone you see when you don't pay attention to them? Let me go this way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to somebody. Here's the entertainer. You're a photographer. You're a photographer, and I'm bad at this guy. Don't give me the stuff. Do you realize what you're doing to me? And I see you got the camera on. I turn and go, and start smiling immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Just right there. And then go, now I'll get back to you. But they won't miss that. You know, as an entertainer, now let's reverse that, or what we might say or do that will mean something
mm-hmm.
to someone. You know, that's difficult to think of, but I mean, if you try, if you feel in your heart, it's important. That's the thing for an entertainer, more than anything, I believe. And it kills me when we hear some of the other guys, but they only promote the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Media doesn't want to talk anything good. They just want to see what's bad.
Who are some of the good guys in your mind? I bet they're part of our audience would be interested in your inside Hollywood. Who are some of the people that when you think back on that you interacted with or you were around that you say, you know, they really were as good as they were cracked up to be or maybe even surprisingly better?
No, I'm just, you're knocking me out. I'm just trying to really think. Ralph Edwards was such a great guy. Ralph Edwards, let's go on. It's in my book, but I'm having a senior moment right now, Paul. Jeff Chandler and Randolph Scott took up the tickets when Little Webster and I did a show in Brentwood. They both said to me, said, you know what, so our children think Little Webster Webfoot is bigger in their minds than we are as stars. They didn't say that ugly. In other words, you just said, you don't realize how important you are as a children's entertainer, Jimmy. You know,
so
like
here's
that.
Two big Hollywood stars
saying,
oh, yeah. As far as our kids are concerned, you're a bigger deal than we are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. But good guys. Good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you've got this Center for Youth Patriotism. So if people go online and they donate to the Center for Youth Patriotism, what it does is it provides travel expenses.
That's right.
For you to go everywhere and tell your story and tell this story of the flag and
yes.
of America.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. That's why I say I can't imagine what it would mean. Yeah, but I don't have to ask anybody.
How often do you do that?
It depends on the time of year it is and everything. But the schools, it's amazing, Paul. When I go speak to some, I talk to all of them. I mm-hmm. talk to Lions, Kiwanis, Rotary, Optimists, all of them. I'm a member of all of them because that's my life as a motivational speaker. But I tell them when they go in and they tell a school, either a principal or a teacher, hey, we had a guy speak to us, and he's a member of the World War II. He's in Patton's Third Army Combat Engineers, attached to the group at Liberated Booking Wall Concentration Camp. And they said, have him come to your school and talk to the civic and history classes. They can actually get me in schools easier than I can because they'll say, hey, that's a taxpayer. Let's let Jimmy come over.
So do you speak mostly to schools in California, or do you go all over the place?
Well, not now, because, I mean, I can't fly like I used to. So
mm-hmm.
I did, but I'm mostly Southern California. Fresno, I've gone up there several times, too.
Mm-hmm.
And after your broadcast, wherever it is, if they say, come up here, man, I'll get my little Scion and go right on up there. Would love to.
Uh-huh.
Each time I get to go, it's just, like I say, it's that little boy coming to life performing.
Is there one piece of feedback you've received on one of those speeches that stands out in your mind as underscoring what makes it so worthwhile for you, what you get out of it?
Yeah, but mainly one of the at-risk students one time, a little girl came up. When I say little, she's 15 years old. And she said, Mr. Weldon, I forgot all of my problems when you were talking just now. Thank you for coming to speak to us. And I think, good golly, that those kind of things are just knock me out.
Mm-hmm. So when you do these presentations, you shared with us the I Am the Flag speech. I'm sure you use that everywhere you go?
Yeah.
What else?
I usually open with that. We always close with prayer, holding hands, and talk about each. But the idea is to say a goal setting. Don't forget, you're the most important person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if every one of us felt that way, everyone we run in contact should feel the same way. That's why I say the two greatest things you can ever say to anybody are these: thank you and I love you. Mm. They're not used enough. One of my buddies passed away a couple of years ago, Dr. George Fishbeck, member of the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters. He stood up at me one time. He said, I never hugged anybody until Jimmy Weldon hugged me. So now they're little widows that stand in line on Sunday morning waiting for a hug. He said, you know what hurts? It's only one they get during the week. Don't stop. So when I go to places where I've been, they say, here comes a hugger when I walk in. Lady gave me a thing one time and said, where a psychiatrist said, nobody realizes the value of hugging somebody and saying, hey, you mean something to me. And I believe this with all my heart. Mm-hmm. In other words, and when I think of some dad and my mother and my two brothers and I, we always hugged each other. We never would walk up and shake hands. Can you imagine that? When a dad walks up to some young man and his son shakes his hand, I think, good golly, dad would have been hugging me.
So be forewarned, if you're going to bring Jimmy Weldon in to speak to one of your groups, somebody is going to get hugged. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, another example of just how much rich material resides in the amazing brain of this 92-year-old. One of the videos I have up for you on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page is Jimmy explaining some of the background of Emma Lazarus's famous poem on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. We'll hear him share that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting RVCountry.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly-and-buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at RVCountry.com.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country, with 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, coming in for a landing with 92-year-old Jimmy Weldon, who was a licensed pilot for nearly 70 years until giving up that pursuit just within the last year. He has not stopped sharing the entertaining duck voices that made him famous or his infectious patriotism. If you heard him perform Old Glory, a tribute to our flag, on our last episode, you know what I'm talking about. And here's another example for you.
You know, young leaders, tomorrow, when those terrorists struck New York, I thank God they didn't take down one thing. That's the Statue of Liberty. As long as that gentlewoman standing in the harbor holding that torch, the vacancy lamp is lit and the welcome mat is out. But sadly today, many Americans think of immigration as being the great evil. And with the flood of illegal immigrants coming in, this may very well be. But I'm not talking about them. I'm going back over 200 years ago
when the influx of men and women from every nation on the face of this earth produced that incredible interwoven patchwork quilt that is the texture of our society. It's indeed our strength. Many of the signers of the Declaration of Independence weren't born here, they came here. When they realized how sweet freedom tasted, they were willing to put their names on that document, pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. No, America is not, as some would say, an elevator that once you enter, you want the doors to close. If you need proof of this, just read what's on the base of our Statue of Liberty. Many can quote it, "Give me your tired, you poor, you huddled masses, yearn to breathe free." But if that's all you know, you don't know it. That's just the third verse. A wonderful Jewish lady named Emma Lazarus wanted to help raise money to build a pedestal. The French gave us a statue, we had to build a base. When you realize the size of the statue, the base had to be enormous. School children contributed pennies. Emma Lazarus contributed a poem. And when she realized the size of the statue, she was reminded of another statue in another harbor at another time, the fabled Colossus of Rhodes. You see, young leaders, guarding the harbor of Greece was a giant warrior whose open legs spanned the water. It was so big it was visible 5 miles at sea. It lasted 59 years until an earthquake took it down. But the unusual thing about this warrior held a torch high in the air, and the torch was to keep people away. Emma Lazarus compares our statue with that Greek statue. She calls ours the new Colossus. Listen to these words. They're so powerful, so filled with electricity, so dynamic. By the time I get to the third verse, son, it will make more sense than you ever knew. These are all the words on the base of our Statue of Liberty. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name is Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor where twin cities frame. "Keep ancient lands your storied pomp," cries she with silent lips. "Give me, you're tired, you're poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." No, young people, they don't hate us around the world. They just don't know why we love our great country, our form of government. I'm indeed proud to be an American. God bless America.
If you want to see the conviction in his face as he shared those words, check out the video on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. His personal website is jimmyweldon.com, and I also have the links up for you at hometownheroesradio.com.
I've got a few more questions for you. One with regard to World War II. So you and your two brothers, you're all World War II veterans. You're three of the more than 16 million Americans who wore a uniform in World War II. When you go and talk, or if a young person who wasn't alive says, "What was that all about? Why did you guys go overseas? What were you fighting for?" You have an answer for that? Can you put that in perspective?
We went because it meant something. We were fighting for our country. I've got a thing now called The Pirate Saves America. It's a new DVD. And I think about how in our War of 1812, how this talks about it and how it ends. And I think about how the British were fighting for an empire, but we were fighting for our freedom. Freedom. We got a thing that says freedom is not free.
Amen. You know what the last words of every show of Hometown Heroes are? That this show that you're on?
No.
Those are the last words that I say every show. Freedom is not free.
Oh, amen.
You got me. But I didn't mean to interrupt. Keep
no,
going.
No. Go ahead. No, I want to hear from you. You're giving me ammunition.
You're preaching the truth there. So this pirate that saved America.
Yeah, this is a story about Jean Lafitte and how what happened and that the young people don't even know. And it's like, golly Moses. So I think about our young people and say, what are we going to do? the flag of Iwo Jima, the one that was planted on the moon. Are our young people going to follow that flag? When someone sings us our national anthem and belts it out like some private song for themselves, this hurts. Mm. I remember when, come on, Jimmy, what's the matter with you? When she grabbed her by and said, oh, say, can you see?
Roseanne.
Oh, golly. Thought, my land, what is this? They don't realize it. When a young man doesn't even know what the symbol of our flag really means, and that to think that they, do you know, Paul, that only less than 25% of our graduating students from high school know that George Washington was the first president of the United States of America? Mm. You think about what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about prayer for our country. Man, we need it like never before.
Here's a number for you, 406,000. That's how many Americans died in World War II. You and your brothers all came home from the war. What kind of perspective do you have for those who didn't? And have you ever thought, you know, I could have been one of those. I could have been one of the more than 406,000 who never made it home.
Oh, yeah. I close with prayer at our American Legion in every meeting because I'm the chaplain emeritus. And I always talking about, I say, Father, we thank you so much for those heroes that are represented by that MIA flag draped over that empty chair. They're with you right now in post everlasting. We'll all be together someday, but thank you. They gave their all that we can be free right here tonight as we're standing together in our little building, the American Legion. That's right. You just think it's
kind of a humbling thought.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. How blessed we are to live in a country greatest that was ever designed. And yet, if we're not careful, we'll lose it. I was thinking about what one of the girls said the other night in our speech contest with American Legion. Said, what, Benjamin Franklin asked him, what kind of a country do we have? And he said, well, you have a republic if you can keep it. In other words, it's up to us. We can't let our freedoms we take for granted, and yet we don't really realize how blessed we are. Paul, you're doing a great job. I mean, I thank you for letting me be on your program. But
well, the thanks go to you. I know everyone's been real entertained here. I have thought of a couple more questions for you. One, going all the way back to 70 years ago, did you lose any buddies in the war, either anybody from back home or anyone you had trained with or served with?
Yeah, in fact, one of my children, students that I grew up with at Camp Swift, Texas, he ran over to when we first went in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
He ran over to this big place where the bomb had gone off. They'd set it off, but something was still there, and they blew up another one. He died in it, just by running over there to be one of the first ones to see what had happened when it detonated a bomb, learning how to work with the combat engineers.
Mm.
He was, you know, saying, by land.
Yeah.
How
well,
fragile.
doesn't that tell you that the same thing could have happened to you?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's why I'm saying you've got, how blessed, how thankful we need to be.
Have you ever been, you know, they didn't build it till 2004, long overdue, and it took World War II veterans themselves donating $190 million to build it. But have you been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
Thank you for asking me. Pat Ogle, who was the head of the Bulldog Foundation for years.
In Fresno.
Is one of my dearest friends. He has begged me to go. I said, Pat, I don't want to go. What's amazing, I'm a pilot, and I've been flying all my life, and I love flying. But with my inability to walk like I really would like to, I'm not really interested in going. Isn't that a shame to say that?
Well, can I twist your arm a little bit?
Talk to me.
Pat's a friend of mine too, and what he's talking about is it's a thing called Honor Flight. It's going all over the country. And
right.
We've got wheelchairs for anybody who needs them, and those who even don't think they do. We get a guardian for every veteran. When you go in a group of about 70 veterans. You see the World War II Memorial, the Korean War Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial, a bunch of other sites. It's amazing the spontaneous things that happen, and the people, maybe from this country, maybe from other countries, who will see you wearing that hat that says World War II veteran and come up and shake your hand and say thank you for serving our country.
Oh, I know. I know what you're saying.
And I'm just imagining you and the audiences that would start to gather around you as you start to tell some of your stories or maybe even do your voices. I bet you might have a good time. And if you're interested, I'll get you an application and we'll get you there to Washington. You don't even have to fly the plane.
No. Oh, bless your heart, Paul. Thank you.
But yeah, we might have to put, you know, we do have a dinner where we have a talent show. And any of the veterans who have special talents, if they play an instrument or, you know, they do magic tricks, they have to come up and show those talents. So I don't know if you could handle having to entertain a crowd of your fellow World War II veterans, but we might have to put you into service that way.
Does a bear live in the woods? Oh, that would thrill me, sure enough. Just the thoughts of having to go to the airport and get on that. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
And it's a charter plane where you don't have to switch planes, and every one of your needs is cared for. But I'll stop giving you my sales pitch. If you want to go, we'll get you there, and there'll be a big crowd waiting for you. The way the Central Valley of California, where I live, has responded to this has been amazing, and it's happening all over the country. So it's a pretty neat experience.
Yeah,
I'd love to get you there.
At the American Legion post right where I am now, several of the guys have gone and said, Jimmy, you don't understand. You can't even believe how good it is. I said, yeah, I can. But isn't that awful?
Well, we'll keep working on you. No pressure. Like I said, we'll make you entertain. You know, the thing is, with the Honor Flight program, we won't take a penny from any veteran. He has to accept this trip free of charge. You paid for it long ago by your service to our country. But in your case, we would make you entertain the other guys. I mean, we'd be wasting your talents if we didn't.
Golly.
I don't want to forget to say thank you for serving our country. And thank you for telling us about it and for sharing your passion for this country and for the flag and for patriotism. When you think back on your experience in the Army and how different your life would have been, I mean, you wouldn't have met your wife, right? What are you most thankful for? Or what are you most proud of with having served your country the way you did?
I think I'm most proud of my parents for having brought me up the way they did, and the background of having the faith that I have, not only in our country, but each other. Yeah, it's time. The only thing which we have no control, we can only spend it. We have to spend it wisely. As I said to you before, perhaps I should go there to that role.
I think you'd love it, but I'm biased. And is there anything else that I didn't ask you about that you think people ought to know?
No. Just what an honor just that you've given me already. Father, thank you for this time. It seemed like a moment ago, Paul came in, now it's time to say goodbye. Bless his work, it's what he's doing with Heroes, World War II. We owe you so much, we give you praise and glory forever, Father. Amen.
You know, I almost left that last part out of our broadcast today because it was kind of a personal moment, but I left it in because I figured it was just another example of how Jimmy Weldon can simultaneously be the ultimate performer but also the authentic patriot and genuine friend that anyone who's ever met him knows him to be. Again, for more information, go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.